certainly in the case of the companies that we work with, but I would suggest, or certainly in our case, it's also true of small businesses. I think increasingly your competition can come from anywhere, geographically, come from different sectors, adjacent sectors, possibly completely unrelated sectors. So I think we all need to cultivate the edge, whatever that means, have more conversations, develop our peripheral vision, see what's happening elsewhere. Because not only can your biggest competition come from completely left field, but also your kind of biggest opportunity, your biggest new kind of growth opportunity can come from outside of your core domain of expertise. And I love this quote that illustrates that point from J.G. Ballard: the future reveals itself through the peripheral. And I just want to reinforce that point with probably our biggest commercial success today as a company has been running a workshop and then doing a whole bunch of stuff, by way of follow-up. The workshop involved 10 very good organisations, two of whom were McLaren, the Formula One racing company, and NATS, the National Air Traffic Control Service, who run air traffic control in all major airports across the UK. Don't know about Newquay, I don't know if anybody knows, but anyway, NATS are the national body. Very, very different organisations. One is motorsports, the other is air traffic control. Would not really have a reason to even have a conversation, let alone work together and collaborate. But the workshop, crudely, to cut to the chase, McLaren was showing off all their whiz-bang technology and innovations, and other people in the room were seeing, that might be interesting, that might be interesting. Sort of in a sort of dance card style fashion, that was the format of the workshop. And most of the stuff that McLaren was showing off was bits of engines and bits of carbon fibre, kind of super streamlined carbon fibre casing. But at the end of the day, almost as an afterthought, they said, oh yeah, oh no, in fact it was a mistake. We were given a tour of the ludicrously lush McLaren offices, won the Sterling Award for Architecture designed by Norman Foster and Partners, I believe. Quite a sight to behold. Anyway, we walked past it and we walked into a laboratory, and then we were told, oh no, you're not supposed to go in here. It was a mistake. They're super secretive in many ways because Formula One is very competitive. But we caught a glimpse of some interesting control panels, which it turned out they revealed was some predictive software that they developed when they run their races, their Formula One races, wherever they are in the world, be it Singapore or Japan. They have a kind of nerve centre, control centre in Woking, where they try and predict what happens in the future in the race. So, and the reason they do that is because they want to plan when to overtake, when what tyres to use, how much fuel to put in, and the data sources they're pulling in are obviously about the car and the driver, but also about the weather and other cars and other factors. Anyway, to cut a very long story short, Peter Tomkinson, the guy on the right here, revealed that in a big airport like Heathrow, they try and predict what happens in the future, because that's kind of their job, but their current models, they only really know about 10 minutes into the future with any certainty what's going to happen, and beyond that 10-minute window, the margin of error is so great that it's basically anybody's guess. And so what Heathrow's response to this, and all other major airports' response to this, is to have everything on standby, the caterers, the baggage people, even the staff and the crew and us, the punters, just in case it's needed in 10 minutes time, which is a ludicrous situation. It's a massively inefficient system, but not entirely uncommon. And anyway, McLaren software promised, at least on the back of the fact packet calculation, promised a 2-hour predictive window, which would allow an airport such as Heathrow to strip out so much of this redundancy and save huge chunks of money. So anyway, we went through this U-shaped process. We ran it below the radar. It was quite frustrating for quite a long period of time, partly because both of these guys couldn't get the sign-off from their respective bosses to spend the time it needed to make this work. But thankfully, through their persistence and a little bit of cajoling and prodding from us, they got there in the end. And they've now they trialled it in Heathrow and Hong Kong airports, both successfully, and they've now entered a joint market where they're tackling. The market for this is 600 airports worldwide, and it's a multi-billion dollar market. So a really huge joint venture that came out of just a sort of chance conversation we entered in this room sort of by accident, as I say. So the future revealed itself through the peripheral. There's a nice example from our experience. I think my penultimate point is around kind of culture, shifting the mindset, something that Nick and 100% Open do together, and Nick is great at this stuff. But I love this quote, which Lego used quite a lot, actually, which is, people are much more likely to act their way into a new way of thinking than think their way into a new way of acting. There are a lot of agencies out there, like 100% Open, who do nothing but write strategy documents, which I suppose is a nice way to earn a living, though it's a bit boring. But actually, it's really boring, and it's much better just to do and learn through doing than to think. So anyway, I love this quote. An example, I think it's my final example I want to give, comes from E.ON, one of the big six energy companies, who are all being hammered in the press, I think quite rightly, largely, for sort of a cabal of energy suppliers and not sufficient competition in that space. But there's a small team within E.ON, an innovation team essentially, that we're working with, who have a vision of E.ON being essentially a community energy company, whatever that means. We're trying to figure that out. But rather than spending years writing obscure strategy documents and doing consumer insight research, we thought, well, let's just try it out and see how it works. So we built up a website and a platform and a community of several thousand E.ON customers and asked them what they thought. And it was more focused than that. But essentially, it was a competitive process, small prizes. And that's now grown, and it's slightly terrifying. On the 12th of February, Channel 4 are going to be launching a TV programme which was, until 2 days ago, going to be called Future Families, and now apparently the Channel 4 schedule is umming and ahhing about the name, so it might be called The Home of the Future. So on the 12th of February, look out for a programme that's either called Future Families or The Home of the Future. On the back of that programme, we're going to run a whole series of competitions, and basically we're looking for any gadgets, any products, any services that E.ON ultimately can implement, buy, do a license deal with. So if you're in that camp, if you run a business that maybe can do that, again, come and talk to me afterwards. I'd love to encourage you to participate in this process. There's some big prizes for people that submit ideas, but there's also a route to submit via an open, confidential IP, and we can help you make sure that you absolutely get a good deal out of doing that. So companies like E.ON are trying to do this as well. I can't stress enough. You may be sitting here thinking, well, that's all well and good for those big organisations, but maybe you don't work for a big organisation. We talked earlier about Cornwall being a small business economy, which, as I say, I think is absolutely a strength, because quotes like these: "It's not the big that eat the small; it's the fast that eat the slow." Every single one of the companies I've talked about, and every single one of the larger organisations in our network, are absolutely terrified of the future. They know that they are slow and bureaucratic. And in my mind today, I've been writing a blog post, which I'm going to try and write on my way home, called "What Are Big Companies For?" Because I think a lot of big companies don't really know what they are for, and they're figuring that out, and we're going along for the ride with them. But it's the creativity and ingenuity of perhaps companies like yours in this room that are the future. And as the Anglo-American said to Tiger X, we need you. And these guys almost need you more than you need them. But anyway, so I think that is absolutely true. So just in summary, it's all about the network. It's about the know-who, not the know-how. And they say it's a small world. I guess it's a small world. But I think actually the networks are just getting bigger and bigger. Facebook recently did some research where, this concept of 6 degrees of separation, where everybody in the world is separated by no more than 6 steps from somebody else, a famous experiment in the 1960s. Well, Facebook recently looked at that methodology again, and I won't go through it in detail, but basically they concluded that these days, through the rise of social media in the last 5 or so years, it's more like 3.5 degrees of separation, and within a single country, it's more like 2.5 to 3 degrees of separation. Whether that's true or not, I'm sceptical about the methodology, but needless to say, the access is there in a way that it previously wasn't. Another quick anecdote, but a good friend of mine, Steve, was doing some work in a kind of government space and dealing with a high-level government minister, and he approached the minister's formal office and said, I would like to meet to discuss such and such, and the office came back saying, yes, I think we can squeeze you in about 3 months next Wednesday. And then that was not fast enough, so my friend Steve found this guy on Twitter, if it happens, and sent him a message saying, I'd love to talk to you about such and such. And he said, sure, come on over, I'm free this afternoon, if you're free, come on over. And so, but just tell my office that you're coming. And then a slightly farcical situation ensued, where Steve was in the taxi telling the private office, I'm on my way over, he said he's free. And then the private office was getting all in a fluster, that their system, this kind of 3 month in the future booking system, was completely dysfunctional and broken. And I think that access is there now. Yes, there are, of course, there are old boy networks that, and old girl networks as well that, that make the world go round. But I think increasingly we can get to anybody within one or two or three steps of separation. And companies like 100% Open try and make that a little bit easier on both sides. And I started out by saying it's all about building productive and engaged networks. And I think if we do that, the byproduct is innovation. I think we shouldn't be chasing innovation as an end in itself. It's a happy byproduct of these kind of vibrant networks. So I guess my closing comments would be: avoid the echo chamber. Talk to as many people as you can. Close networks. Create echo that create exaggerated opinions or exaggerated reputations. I think it's good to have a diverse network. Have people you disagree with. Talk with them regularly. Share with them your opportunities, your needs, your opportunities. Cultivate the edge. Engineer that peripheral vision. See what's happening in other markets. Come to events like this. Build your social media presence. Our whole business is 100% Open. It's all about word of mouth and all about people just remembering we exist and thinking we might have something useful to contribute. It's nothing more than that. And I'm sure you've been doing this already. In fact, I know you have. But if you haven't, if there's still people here that you haven't spoken to after this closing session, talk to someone you don't know. You never know what might happen.